And we are a podcast has no name. Cue the smooth jazz, man.
No name. All right.
Oh my word.
Thank you.
Whenever you
so
go,
much.
You know. Swimming and the sea and the little thumb of data. And you got kind of crazy. And then I see her walking. And then she goes, oh, sorry. Okay.
Okay. All right.
I really want you to meet my dad. I really do.
Sitting oh, yeah. by the oh, doctor yeah. debate. No name. Walking your way. Mm. Sitting by Terrible. The dock of the bay, reviewing oh. your movie.
Hey!
And that is a wrap.
All right, Castro. All
right, y'all.
All right, y'all. Later.
Bye.
White Walker perpetuated offenses are considered especially heinous. In Westeros, four dedicated friends investigate and discuss these vicious episodes as members of an elite squad known as A Podcast Has No Name.
I'm Ambush.
And I am Curly Castro.
And I'm Morgan. And we are A Podcast Has No Name. And tonight, we'll be talking about Judas and the Black Messiah.
Damn, you got a fucking radio voice now. That's what's going on and shit? Wow. I was looking down and shit, too.
And you were like, wait,
I'm like, what the fuck? Is this the weather segment? And now we have a report from downtown. Take it away, Jerry. Oh, shit. This is what's been going on. This is what's been going on while I've been gone and shit. Motherfuckers getting radio voices and shit. Okay. I just wake up and get on my podcast, but it's, apparently I'm missing a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it's a step. You missed okay. a radio
I'm
voice.
Not
step.
Ready. Oh. Wow.
It's the mic.
Okay, Mrs. Jones. Mrs. Jones. You go right ahead, yo. You got this shit.
And we're back. Like, like we never left, Castro. That is before we get started. How familiar were you guys with this story before seeing the movie? Ambush, you first.
I was, before seeing the movie, I thought I was pretty familiar with the story. I didn't realize the movie would have so much about Bill O'Neill. Like, I was unfamiliar with the character, with that person. It's funny to call it a character. This is a real life story. I was unfamiliar with that person altogether. But, familiar with the work Fred Hampton was doing. Very familiar with how he was assassinated. So watching it all play out, I think I did forget about him going to prison. Fairly familiar, and really happy that a story that I never thought would reach the public view was on such a large platform. I can only imagine if we weren't in COVID with the cinematic release for this, how that would have felt.
Yeah, for real.
I don't know if I echo that sentiment about the cinematic. It's just very hard for me in our current climate to act like what would happen if we had regular crowd. And I don't know, y'all. I think if we had the opportunity to go to theaters, I think there would be a lot of I think there would be some conflict. I don't like I'm being honest with y'all, and I love the movie, but I don't think we would have like a watershed Black Panther moment if y'all I think we would have had something more akin to Birth of a Nation and Harriet Tubman moments where people always, Birth of a Nation, they were sitting there waiting, tick, tick, tick. They're waiting for, okay, ready? Week of, all right, boom, right? And Harriet was just, it was semi-poorly executed. You know, people have their opinions about that. I just feel like, how political everything is now, this was a perfect movie to have like a lot of blowback if it was out and we were getting up going there in physical. It'd be, you know, maybe a politician or two would have used it to their
oh
you get
yeah.
what I'm saying.
I think You're absolutely
You get what I'm saying?
Right.
So they benefit. I don't like that whole purity of the Black Panther and all that washing. I don't think like the same way the purity of like Obama getting, you know, elected, you know, for all his faults and drone killings. But that pure wash, those things seem like they're in some past watershed moment, if y'all will. I'm not trying to be dour or whatever, but now it seems like everything is so highly politicized and charged with certain electricities that I don't think, you know what I'm saying? It would, like, the second Obama re-election wasn't as the first one. And then the next election, obviously, you know, we're talking two elections since then, and everything's like more like, all right, bear with me. If something was looking like the abyss with the floating water, now it's like just hard water coming out your faucet. And it's not magical. It's not making your face. It's not making, oh, look, I saw Black Panther in me. No, man, we watching y'all. We got the Proud Boys outside. Like, can y'all don't think you...
Real life.
I didn't think about that.
Right. And I didn't think about that because I'm so disconnected from going to a theater right now. But such a good point, because especially here, I don't know what it's really like with these particular groups elsewhere, but Portland is like a magnet to these right wing.
And it's the outside looking in, because I can call Am any day of the week or call you and tell you, oh, they, from how they're telling us, you know, is Portland on fire? I can call, seriously, I can call y'all every day.
Right.
Is Antifa, have they moved to the Southwest Corridor? Because outside looking in. And then I have that problem with my girl. My girl, she goes to Florida frequently. That's where her family is. But everybody outside is like, oh my God, Florida is like this crazy hot spot. And there are people dead. You know what I'm saying? So like the media is playing on a lot of our fears. But to answer the...
For sure. But
yeah, but let me give the original answer. I just wanted to give that spiel. I'm pretty familiar with most Black Panther stories. Sometimes I don't always have the intricacies on hand. I did a lot of research in college and then, you know, for certain projects and stuff. So I'm familiar about a lot of the outlines of certain stories. And I appreciated this movie for the detail it gave. I knew about bitch ass Will O'Neill, but he was definitely an asterisk in how I knew, because to me, Will O'Neill was, and that's why I like how he's portrayed in the movie, because he was a caricature of like 15 members of each chapter. Okay. Like, people need to know towards the end when the Panther Party was falling apart, there was a idea. It was like, and it was like a myth, but it was a truth. And like people said, you didn't know who you were talking to at the end of the Panther. Mm. You didn't know if you were talking to a fellow Panther or an agent or somebody compromised. Right. Like, you had no idea who your fellow Panther was. And that was pretty sad. So, I'm glad that they show it from this angle. I know people have some issues with it, but I think it was important to show the veracity of the government's extinction agenda. And but definitely the movie filled in a lot of you know, detailed blanks, gave me a full rounded view of Sister Deborah, now Queen Akua. Her new name is Akua. Or is it a, yeah, she changed her name. I'm sorry, but it's Chairman, Deborah Johnson, she changed her name. I think her name is like Queen of Cool now. I'll double check. But yeah, I like that I got to learn more about her. But
yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm like y'all, I felt really pretty familiar with the story, and I knew, just like Castro, knew the name, knew what he did, but didn't really think about him beyond that, other than being upset, right? Like, how could you kind of thing. But I definitely, like, I wonder if, did you need to be familiar with this story to understand the degree of historical accuracy that they gave us to understand it. You know what I mean? Because there are people that don't understand the government's agenda, past, present, you know, they don't get it. And it sounds like a conspiracy theory to them. So when you see it flatly, and by that, I mean, the words that J. Edgar Hoover said we've had access to that information for a long time, but that doesn't, it hits different, right? When you hear it and you see it in the way that it was intended to be used. And in that, you know, lecture style way of talking to all of these agents and just saying flatly, like, we got to get rid of this. This can't be something that's around. Does that hit for people that don't know the story?
Well, I think it begins with what's your entry point in terms of like Black Panther history? A lot of people didn't do independent history. They would follow trends, whatever Spike Lee might be wearing. And also, look, I love Mario, love his father even more, but Panther is very misleading in terms of like being an accurate portrayal, because I remember watching Panther, I'll tell y'all a little story. And they get a lot of little beats right, but I remember watching Panther and I got all hyped up, you know, because I was like, oh, they're finally putting it in some movie form instead of these black and white grainy videos and stuff.
Yeah, and, documentaries.
And I remember my mind getting blown when I realized that Judge was an entirely fictional and made up character just for the movie. And so I'm like asking my mom, you know who Judge was? Like in the pit, was this a guy? You know, what did he do with his street light and all this other stuff? And I'm like, you know, this stuff is, and I think it was important. It was more important for me to be accurate with finding out about it in that, you know, in the 90s through that movie medium than it was this fantastic. It's like a comic book story. Panther is like a comic book story.
Yeah.
It's done in that realm. With the action and the sound and the street light and then beating up people's moms in the street. And that's when the Panther Party started for me. And little Bobby and Eldridge Cleaver was there and everybody's there. Everybody's there, right? Then they go fight Kumo D. Kumo D comes over. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I remember like enjoying the movie, but I also remember when I was reading like the details about it. That Judge thing just blew me. I was like, what do you mean? It's not a real person?
And
so then it started making me like, all right, I need to actually go like research and not just let Hollywood. And, you know, Mario and all his, you know, mad squabbles that nigga got. But in all his grace, you know, he was very much being cinematic, which is fine. And maybe people needed it that way. But I needed more accurate detail. So,
Yeah.
But it definitely was a good start. You know what I'm saying? It was a start. I was a teenager, and you know, it definitely put me on that path if I wasn't already from the stuff that I know.
So I'm going to run the synopsis, and then I have a question. The synopsis from IMDb is Bill O'Neill infiltrates the Black Panther Party for FBI agent Mitchell and J. Edgar Hoover. As party chairman, Fred Hampton ascends falling for a fellow revolutionary en route, a battle wages for O'Neill's soul. I feel like I need to read that whole thing over, but question is, does that synopsis feel like what you watched?
No.
No, not necessarily. All right, let's ask this grander question. Whose story is this?
Right. That's exactly why I'm asking this question, Castro, because to me, I understand that story is being told through William O'Neill, right? And it's not his story to me. That's not what I watched.
That's curious.
I didn't watch his story.
I feel like it's a Fred Hampton story, but from a William O'Neill first person perspective. If you will.
Exactly.
Yeah. So to me, that feels like it is Bill's story.
It's his avatar.
Only because Fred Hampton's story, I feel like I would have gotten more from, you know, more of Fred Hampton's story. But I feel like we got so much, especially from Bill's perspective, that it was, you know, kind of Bill's story.
I fully agree with the, we'd get more if it was told through Fred's lens.
Mm-hmm.
However, we don't get enough of Bill's actual perspective to me. Like, you're not really, you're not under, was he in turmoil? You know what I mean? For doing this?
Mm-hmm.
There were just too many, I feel like we should have gotten more out of his story, like what it meant to him. Was he a tortured soul? Was this the hardest thing he'd ever done? Did he reflect on, maybe I shouldn't have done that? You know what I mean? We didn't get
that. I think that was deliberate because he was 17 when this started. They could have portrayed that a lot more deer in the headlights when they got him on the 17-year-old tip. And I think it was deliberate because, truth be told, because of Chairman Fred Jr.'s involvement, because of Queen Akua's involvement, we were not set on the path to sympathize with the rat, Billy, too much. So,
and I'm happy.
And I've, you know, and it was there because I've seen people talk about it and talk about it in a sense that we need to understand that because we need to know the full bore of the government's involvement in this destruction. So to see them take a 17-year-old and twist and turn him for their own nefarious dealings, that's important too. But at the same time, because this part wasn't told in this story, good old Billy was prolific at his snitching shit. Okay, he was involved.
Yes.
He was involved right after that. He was involved with a drive-by where people were killed and he was exonerated. Like I was talking to my lady about how people, snitches were allowed to, you know, build up their crime portfolio in the midst of these snitching assignments and then get, you know, arrested in the physical and the sight line, but then let out the back of the jail. So like he was a despicable person. I would never sympathize with him. I knew about him and I knew people of his ilk. And if you thought that he was one that was compromised, that might have been the case in the beginning, but that wasn't the case in the end. And that's why he had to off himself. So he, you know, he enriched himself. And the thing about Billy is he thought he was doing the Lord's work because he did think that the Black Panther Party was a detriment. Think about that. A Black person that thinks that this organization is a detriment. There's plenty of that shit going on around right now. Like people,
right?
You know
now.
What I'm saying? They're going at the youth. They're saying Black Lives Matter as an acronym. When I started seeing Black people saying it, that bothers me because I know why. White folks, and I know why other people say BLM, because they don't want to actually say it out loud. And when we started doing it, I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, we know it's not an organization, or do we? Anyway, I move swiftly. So, you know.
We need you in more political conversations, bro.
Yeah.
We got to pull you in other content.
Indeed. My whole life outside of this.
So point being, I think, you know, a lot of this stuff, bottom line, is there's a deliberateness to how we should emote with these people and these characters retelling our history.
Speaking of him supposed being 17 in that moment. No, like Lakeith Stanfield is incredible.
Yeah.
And was incredible, I think, in this role. But he ain't 17 and he ain't close to looking 17.
Right.
And I think that is another thing that is just kind of questionable because we all, and I understand Fred Hampton definitely did not look like a 21-year-old that you
right.
see.
Right. The fact that they were hardened teenagers more so than we see today, that I think that might have been hard to portray.
You're right. And
maybe that lent to the casting, you know, that benefited.
They would have to go with younger actors, like younger looking actors.
Like old boy who's in it.
From Wu-Tang. Yeah, RZA.
From Wu-Tang and New Edition.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And from Moonlight.
Exactly. But they could easily be 17.
He cleans his face. When he cleans his face, that's when he has his little stubble, he looks a little older. But he definitely when he's clean, he definitely looks younger. But I think
that's what I mean. Like they could do it.
Yeah.
But I think there is something there. Like I think you guys just made me realize there is something there. One, they definitely looked older then anyway. I just have such a problem with the fact that like white America looks at Black children as adults.
Yeah.
I'm like, are we doing that? Are we playing?
But Chairman Fred was a towering man at 21.
Yes.
He had height and girth. He was like Am, like bigger than Am. You know what I'm saying? So if Am had that platform when we were all 21, would the age be blurred? Because I still look at him in past things like, God damn, like you did all of this. But obviously he was studying since he was 16. Like, forget school, whatever. Right. I don't know what high school he dropped out of, whatever. That was nothing. Because he, you know, even the scenes where he's teaching all that stuff. So, like, these were hardened.
Right.
Also, more, you're a little older like us. When me and Ann were younger, the older, the young cats look older. They would chisel. They had some facial hair. I remember. There was a few of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them had some facial hair. Mm-hmm. Some of them look a little older. Not the women.
Which allowed them to run with us. Men.
Yeah, the men. Yeah, so you would have a four-year gap friend in the crew because he just was an older-looking motherfucker. So if we were put through that gauntlet, I don't know. You know, with me and Andy out there, you know, like Malcolm on the corner. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not one that looks older. I never looked older. So I don't know what that's like or how people react to that. I always look younger. So, but I, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I kind of jumped the shark. I'm sorry. I moved us into a direction without, on accident. But let's get into the characters really quick and these performances because holy moly donuts, right?
Yeah, man.
So Daniel Kaluuya as Chairman Fred Hampton.
Good going, bloke.
Great job.
Yo, that accent?
Oh, but I knew that. We knew that from Black Mirror days, so... But that he, this is another little accent. This is some Chicago Midwestern.
But I'm saying there's the mid, it's in there. Like, I don't know.
They have this advantage. When I realized that Nicole Kidman had the English accent, I said, wait a minute, they practice to talk like us? And then there's a way. And they explain it to you. They say, oh yeah, do this in the lower register. You know how their voice coaches teach them. We're sitting there like, what are you talking about? We have words like can't. Like, we don't even understand that shit, right? And I've seen her, and I said, oh, this is a dialect. And then so when I seen, like, first of all, we all know what's coming next week. I know this is a Judas and Black Messiah, but what is, we talking about the Black Messiah, what's coming back next week? We all, come on. Yes, come on. What's happening outside my window? Y'all in the Northwest. We have a snowstorm out here. So there's snowfall outside.
Oh.
So, and then, okay. All right, Franklin Saint, the best, not one of the best character on television today.
Wow.
The best.
Is this the new Wire? I keep hearing
it's not
about
so Sofa. Much comparing it to the show. It's this kid and the other kids. He's English. This is the best character on television right now, Franklin Saint. Period. And this cat, my man, I think his name, Damon, he... Oh, Lord have mercy. But again, it's another English cat.
They're both English?
Yeah, but this is English 60s, 70s California lingo, cuz. Like, it, yes. Cut, you know, what it do, cuz. And then you're like, it's like, yeah, when I came here and I started applying, I was, oh, man, you're killing me, dog. You're killing me, man. But anybody, you know, all the listeners, take a gander. This is the great. This is one of the greatest shows out, and it's one of the greatest characters. But again, these Englishmen, they have this advantage of our American dialects because they learned with their vocal coaches to do roles and shit like that.
Right, and American entertainment is just so pervasive, right? Like, it's everywhere. So they're watching the same movies we're watching and then emulating it.
And they're able to have double careers because they can go in their strict English. Yes, in their English bubble and talk as English as they want. And then come over here and do our roles. And their, you know, their humor is very different. Very, very different. Absolutely. The way they run their series, they're not even called shows, they're called series, is very different. 6-episode seasons. It's very different over there. They have a whole different, you know, just same with like Bollywood or any other regional. But because they're able to, okay, you got like 16 American dialects, I can do 12. Send me, you know, tell their agent, yo, get me those roles, all right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so anyway, I'm sorry. I'm being long-winded.
And I can work on the other four while you're working
on
it.
How about it? Getting Nicole Kidman, do it.
Right.
Shit.
No, Nicole Kidman, just a reminder, she's from Australia, right? Like, which is even more.
Yes.
Like, that's even got more
Kiwi
of a
thing. I know she'll get, they'll kill me. Yes. But that's how I remember. It's the Kiwi thing, even though I don't know if Kiwis are for Australians or for Newfoundlands, but that thing. And I'm like, huh? Like, you know, the Hugh Jackman thing. It's like, you know, so yes. They have an advantage, but they do it. So, like I say, like, he's talking this 70s L.A. lingo. So, Kaluuya, when I seen the trailer pieces, I thought it was very important for them to put his Fred Hampton voice out like immediately. Like immediately. Because I think he only does press in the English language, in that English accent and his Black Mirror roles. But other than that, you know, he goes very Americana. Yeah.
Totally. And this was just a humongous performance. I mean, I don't even know what to, you know, like, I don't have the right word.
When the crowns answered the door and they slid the slide over with the little gate. Chairman Fred Hampton, the Black Pat. Oh! He had his back to the door, to the sink.
The way he turned around.
Chairman Fred Hampton, Black Panther Party. What? Yeah, they said, open the door.
The door is open.
We got our weapons in the glove compartment, yo. Yeah.
Man, you want to watch that one scene right now again.
I wish that, like, well, I'll get to that.
No, we get to, because I have a speech question, because I feel like, you know, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but I feel like you got to go with this speeches, X speeches, and Selma speeches in terms of the power of the speech performance in this genre for us and our historical people. Like, I think it's in that echelon. It fits with those.
I think that was a great aspect for them to highlight in the film, him listening to speeches and studying and trying to work on cadence, and Deborah having that conversation. Like, I never thought about that because we put these characters, rightfully so, on pedestals, and they're superhuman to us, and they're so iconic with their voices and the way they present. At some point, I mean, it never occurred to me that this wasn't them just naturally speaking, and this is just, I'm just freestyling, going off the top, and this is, you know, intention to the cadence. I'm like, that's just MLK's flow. That's my man's flow. What you mean?
Right, that's just how he talks. Right.
Right. Right.
You killed the revolution, but you can't kill one person, but you can't kill people. Oh, I was in there screaming in my living room and shit. People, damn it. Yeah, shit. Like, I mean.
Right.
But that was his one of his most personal, powerful speeches. The whole, you can't, I'm not gonna, when he said, I ain't gonna die slipping on the ice now. I ain't gonna die. What do you like? Having a hard time. I was telling you, get my pedal. Like, he was like,
right.
And that is a famous thing. Like, I don't think I'm going to die, like, normally slipping outside or get hit by a car. You know, I'm going to die for the people.
Right.
And Deborah hit him.
You ain't gonna be
you
can age.
Die for the people because you don't have another person growing inside you. You dumbass revolutionary. Oh. Yeah, it's you.
I'm trying to wait it out to talk about exactly that. Fingers crossed that Afro can get on, because I had a reaction in that moment. And I just wonder, you know, if this is going to be a gendered response. Okay, so obviously Daniel was incredible. Lakeith Stanfield as the snitch, William.
Tekashi Sullivan. Billy. Why do you think I kept calling him O'Neal. Billy? No? Ain't that one of the rat songs? No. Billy, yeah, that's one of his songs. So, admittedly, Lakeith went to therapy after the role.
I heard about that.
He said he had to.
I mean, I'm going to play this for us really quick.
Yeah.
Because I have this little, I saw this interview, or not really an interview, but Daniel and Lakeith were talking about their experience on the show. And I'll play this for you guys real quick.
Stories at this time. So I was really moved by it, and I was like, oh yeah, I can't wait to play Fred. Obviously, that's who you're thinking about me for, right? And I had never heard of William O'Neal. So then I looked him up and I was like, oh damn, I kind of look like this dude. You know, and I had to realize and wrestle with my own morals and try and figure out a way to sort of situate myself in this character and find the humanity and truth in him. And it took me a long time to do. I mean, even when we was on set, I was still feeling like, damn, am I even doing the right thing by playing this person?
You're looking at
Wow.
Mm.
I mean,
like when you watch the Eyes on the Prize clip, part two, where he actually gives his interview, because I forget sometimes what he looks like until I see him start talking, and he's wearing this gray suit, and he has a certain cut, and he looks like a nigga I fucking know, and he looked like a nigga to live on my floor, or a cat to live down my floor. Seriously, real talk. Yeah. I grew up in the nigga, he looked just like the nigga that worked in the store, or the guy he was always doing delivery. He looked just like everybody you knew. And your contempt for him just solidified as soon as you would start talking.
Yeah.
Because again, I tell y'all, he believed that he was doing the Lord's work. He thought he was helping. Yeah. Like he even said, in the
movie, he's on the right side of history.
And he looked up to his agent.
Yeah.
To the agent. Like a mentor.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify earlier when I was talking about like it didn't feel like his story because we weren't getting how he felt about it. I want to be clear that I didn't mean so that we could then sympathize. I mean, if this is your story, tell me why you did that. Like, you don't get to just be like, oh, the police jammed me up, so I had to do the thing. Like, what did it mean within your lifetime then? How did it change the trajectory of your life?
It made me think of Sopranos real quick. Y'all watch Sopranos?
I
watch some of it.
All right, so everybody know, but you know about the pussy was the agent and he kind of betrayed Tony.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of knows that piece, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a part in Sopranos where Pussy's getting caught up and he's kind of like confused because, you know, it's getting tight on both ends. And he starts like trying to give information that has nothing to do with what they want. And he starts trying to be like a detective and he starts tailing somebody and he gets in a car accident and stuff. So it's like, so it's almost some like Patty Hearst type thing. You start taking on the attributes of the captive. And so seeing that angle with good old Billy, like he thought he was like an agent and they make you feel that way. They give you a couple of dollars, like you're working for us, like you're a cop but not a cop. And that can really get your motivations all twisted up. So there was no way to sympathize, but I definitely
you're one of us, not one of them.
Yeah, like you know, it, like when the culling is done, you'll be fine. You sneak out the back, you know. And he did that, you know. But that was probably that feeling, like when the shots start, you run out the back. You're protected. You're not like the rest of the darkies or whatever they were exterminating.
Yeah.
And, yo, I was just gonna say, and doesn't that play into you're not that kind of black?
Yes.
You know, you're not. You know, you're not. Ghetto, like that plays into that, and then we see how that plays out, right? Like, but really good. I mean, the way that you're a part of us but not a part of us, that whole state of confusion that leaves a person in like just their mental state of insecurity or security in something, right? And
no sense of belonging.
That will leave you in a real vulnerable. Like, I'm unsure where to go. And so then you start looking at the wrong people as the role models. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they showed him in the movie, at least at some point, like, I feel like he got it. They're not terrorists. And he said, like, they're not terrorists. You know,
early.
There's some other stuff. It was like he understood it, but then just got the more he was a part of it, which you would think he would then understand even better that they're not terrorists, right? Like, he just got more of the police brain. Like, it was just and like none of this could, like, what he was seeing couldn't believe, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And they were definitely doing the carrot and the mule with him on the stick, because if you notice in the movie, there was three times he thought like the mission was mission completed. He's in jail, we got him. He's going back to jail. I thought we got, like, you know, the finish line was never, he didn't understand that there was never going to be any finish line for him with this assignment until, you know, we get rid of this guy. And,
Well, and even then, it's still when we decide.
Exactly. Like, right. When he tried to say, I'm out, he was like, what was the scariest part of the movie?
Oh, God.
Oh, the Lil Rel situation when they gave him the badge back.
Second scariest.
Okay.
The first scariest. If anybody's familiar with Jesse Plemons and how well he is with what he does, when he was wearing his little red beanie in the crowd.
Yo!
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That was wild.
Because, and that's, he's, you know, I'm Breaking Bad fan, a million of him. I mean, Fargo, like this kid, Jesse Plemons, he's cold. He knows how to do that cold look. And when I saw him, when they saw him through, and you know, and Lakeith was on it at that point, because again, this is one of those moments where Fred, as a clue, as Fred is revving the crowd and putting the battery in the back, and you look and you see your handler there that you have been out of touch with and cursed out and bounced on. Chilled.
My man said, I will find you.
You think you can hang up and pay phone on me? Okay, buddy.
Right.
So there was something really interesting the Lucas Brothers did with the writing. I think it may have been a homage to a situation that Jim Brown described in his youth, being at his coach's house.
Mm.
And was it the coach's house or the owner's house? And they were just lauding him with all this praise and just saying, you know, how important he is to the organization. And, you know, like, you know, we wouldn't be where we are without you, blah, 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 blah. And as Jim described it, I can't remember if it was the coach or the owner, was about to go outside to the grill. And he was going outside to work on the car. He had working on the car. And Jim was like, well, let me help you. Like, after spending about a good hour praising this black man. And Jim's like, well, let me come help you with the car.
Touch my fucking car.
And he says, no. He was like, no, we can't do that. You know, they can't see you.
Oh, out yeah, with the garage open out front. Oh, yes. Wow.
So when he mentioned, I'm going to go put some links on the grill, you stay here and, you know, the good stuff's down there. But you stay in here. I'm going to put the links on the grill. That was the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, oh.
You can't be in my backyard.
You can't. Nah. I can't be in my backyard. My neighbors see me and you back here. I was like,
and also the dynamic of the dinner meetings, the dinner debriefings, those took a how comfortable Billy got. Like, I remember the one time he came in with the zoot suit. Hey, Roy, boy.
No. Glasses on.
Doing the step and fetch it to a chair. Right? And then there was the time when he was scared to death. And then there was the time where Roy was like, hey, had his seat open for him. Like, all of that manipulation, that was very, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Em. I don't know if y'all will add some pieces about the Lucas Brothers wrote that. And if anybody's familiar, those are the twin comedian brothers. They wrote this movie. So don't let that go by. I remember when I figured out it was them, I said, oh, it was one of those, like a good, yeah.
So we have to add to that, though, because it's not just the Lucas Brothers. It was they had their screenplay, and then Will Burson had his, I may be pronouncing that wrong, had his screenplay, and they were both shopping it.
Really?
Independently. Yeah. And then apparently they formed like Voltron. Like, this is a culmination of their two.
Wow.
There are two screens.
Do you know the disparate difference between the two, or it's blended now for us not to know?
So what Wikipedia says is that it's directed and produced by Chaka King, who wrote the screenplay with Will Burson. And that's based on a story by the Lucas Brothers.
Okay, so they just blended. Mm-hmm. There's no way to tell if, this is the Billy part and this is the Freddie part. Okay, but that's fair. That's
gotcha. Yeah.
No need to know.
Yeah, because they had both been a Fred Hampton biopic had been in the works for several years, with both the Lucas Brothers and Will Burson writing and shopping screenplays individually since 2014.
Oh, that goes to show you that neither one of them had Queen Akua's blessing, because that's another hurdle with this whole thing.
Yes. Burson's version almost got made with F. Gary Gray directing it.
Hmm.
But then that fell through. And I think that's exactly what happened. It doesn't say that here, but
we're
think
pretty that's exactly the way they roll.
They did not get the blessing. Yep. And then the cast joined this particular, it says, when that fell through, King was hired to helm the project. The cast joined in 2019 with the blessings of the Hampton family, with filming taking place later that fall in Ohio. So I just wanted to get that out, because I didn't know that until today, that this was like a team effort. This wasn't just the Lucas Brothers writing it. Not that I'm not trying to take anything away from anybody.
Right.
This is
undertaking.
This is a For real.
Yeah.
Now that would have shown nice work with the turnout, but I do think there would have been some underhanded and insidious presentation in terms of like people being there protesting all. But that, yeah, that type of stuff. That's the same thing with the Black Panther, but it just wasn't as pure a moment without so many detractors that are you know, put to the ground now. You know what I mean? They're looking for anything to try to come. And this would have been a perfect moment for them to be out there with their shit, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So we already started talking about Jesse Plemons, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to start moving us forward.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
Jesse Plemons, then Dominique Fishback. So Jesse, we did him. Holy moly donuts again. Like, performances. You hated him because you know that person. Like, yeah. You know that dude. I know that white man.
But, oh, here's the other thing. Again, motivations. He was part of the investigation when they, I can't remember the area, if you could find it quick in Wikipedia, but he was the lead investigator for the voter killings. Like, there were two white individuals and a Black man that were doing, voting registration in the South, and they got kidnapped and killed.
Oh, and wow. He
was one of the lead investigators to help solve that crime. So he's thinking he's doing things for certain racial justice. Again, where you stand on the line, but because he did that case, now him taking on the charge to get rid of the Black Panthers, this is all good police work. You know what I mean? I don't know if you found it. Did you find it?
I didn't yet. And you just got me with good police work, because God.
He was good police.
So that and y'all know the incident. It was that the vote walkers, the something walkers, and they were in that group. But I remember it was two white individuals that got killed as well.
Yeah, I do remember. They were, they were doing voter registration. They were in a car by themselves. Mm-hmm. I remember that, mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah. So he was involved with that. So you just see the wires that keep crisscrossing with this stuff during this whole civil rights. It seemed like you look at it, it's a civil rights war. I don't even think the civil rights era. Absolutely. This is like a war, because it was bodies on both sides and people were out for blood to keep on their way of life and to stop, you know, what they thought was infringing. Because that's the perspective I take. It was all about them trying to stop us infringing on their way of life. You know,
right. We
were all right.
Yeah.
Shit. But anyway, sorry.
I just wanted to mention that it definitely felt like in the beginning of the movie, there were a couple of racial things that were said around him where it looked like he felt tense about it. You know, like, oh, is that what we're saying or doing? And then it felt like that just quickly unraveled because of his agenda. You know, like, he wanted to do whatever reason he was going to be a part of this particular.
Well, there was a little competition with his co-worker, right?
And the additional pressure
from Hoover. So you see him,
because that was crazy,
ramping up his
effort. That was crazy. When
he, yes, wasn't that him? He said, "Now imagine your daughter. You see, and you, I know y'all got girl. So like, so now we're evoking your 5-year-old girl. Now imagine this big brute, bigger Thomas with his arm around. Like, that's what that's the picture he was painting.
No, that's exactly what he was doing.
He was like, my daughter's a child. Why would I?
Yeah, but you're gonna let this young black buck, if you let them live, she's gonna bring home one of them. And I can imagine the fright. Like, you wanna talk what? I can imagine the fright in the 70s of, I doubt it was, we know it wasn't prevalent, but you can make tangible this fear that your pristine blonde daughter is gonna come back in here with a shocker. Not just the Brad, this little darker and wearing glasses. No, this is going to be a shocker who storms capitals and who goes to Cal Berkeley, even though he lives in the East Coast. Wait, is he at Cal Berkeley now? Like, you know what I'm saying? Who's burning broad for Vietnam rights? Like, funny enough, I was watching. I got
white women's back on the way, right?
Yeah, like, I got into and real quick, I won't divert, but I got into my Wonder Years bag, and it was one of the scenes where. Jack, the father, the oldest daughter had brought home her boyfriend, and he was like against the war, and Jack is like a Korean War veteran, and they're like, how can you say that? And the guy pulls out, in 2 weeks I'm gonna be drafted, I don't want anybody to die. And you forget that the Wonder Years had so much to do with Vietnam, you know what I'm saying? And that reality of all of that death and all that stuff. Anyway, I'm sorry. just taking me a lot of places. So, you know.
Okay, well, back on track. We'll just cut it there. And let's talk about Dominique Fishback as Deborah Johnson.
Right. Okay, did you, y'all saw her in Power? Did y'all watch that?
I did.
Yeah. MJ did. I didn't watch Power yet.
So Morgan, though, she got something with it. And we see, you know, other, yes. But I liked her playing that younger character, even though she's really not that young, and holding it down. So when I saw her in this playing, you know, growing up a bit, I loved it. And bear with me, Morgan, if I say something wrong, you can digitally smack me. But I loved a nice, regular Afro-looking Black woman of even skin tone, not too dazzling, not wearing chiffon, you know, not some performer from that time, like somebody in the mix,
right,
in the struggle, right next to, was the right. Every time they arrest him, she's screaming at the cop, you know what I'm saying? I really appreciated seeing that. Her and the other female lead, I think what her name was, Deborah, with the shot.
Oh yeah, she was a problem.
I know her name wasn't Deborah, Brenda. I think it was Brenda.
Yo, she is a stand-up.
The lie detector test. She said, hot water car. Hot water car then, nigga. Okay. Yo.
And the amount of passivity that she had for that he was able to.
Yo, that whole energy, was like, oh, so you came straight home?
Right.
get it right. Get your story straight.
Get it right, dog. You better start. I need to hear the gears clicking in your head. Why you getting this story straight? Because my man back here with the menace coming over the seat. Ain't that the menace coming over the back seat? So what did you say?
Yeah.
And where were you? And how was it? And what movie was playing? Yeah.
Dog, when she put that leg up and said, comrade, take the blade from my boot. I said, oh my God, this is not going to go well. I don't know what's happening.
Damn, he was supposed to die right there.
He was
supposed to die right there. He most certainly knew that he was not a cop.
I love his nervous laugh.
We're going to go back to Lakeith right this second. Because
in his throat. Oh, what do you mean? Whoa.
You see what I did? Like, he would... Out of that, all of that anxiety, he would just get like extra cocky all of a sudden.
And yeah,
I'm gonna pick up a Stone Cold Fox with the car busted.
I got my man to replace the steering collar. What you think? Right? Like, come on,
I'm losing it. What's There's water filling in my lungs right now. I'm drowning. I'm about to black out, but I'm gonna smile till I go.
About to black out.
I'm gonna smile till I go. I'm losing consciousness, but I'm smiling. He was. Grinning till the devil come, yo, for real.
We'll get back to Sister Deborah.
Yes, indeed.
Because my word, like,
unbelievable.
That portrayal, I think number one, what I loved about this was getting to see a Black love story that does not involve Hollywood. It doesn't Thank involve you. The outside.
The extras.
It wasn't. Yeah, it was just a real relationship. That was. Yeah.
Thank you.
That was.
Didn't have to show us energy. No lust. Love that.
No.
Just tenderness. No.
Yes. Like actual affection. Like
right.
scared. Show. Right. Scared to show the baby bump. Each other.
Yo. Mm. I'm getting chills right now. Chills right now.
Him shy, being shy, yes, like yes. She called him on it. I was just like, ah, she got you, dog.
How nervous she was when she first was doing poetry with him, to when she would get to the end of a piece, and how powerful it was the way that she was performing it.
Yeah,
I love when they portray how the Panther Party was, and it was filled to the brim with strong Black women running this shit. Because if you remember, we were being harassed, so a lot of the men were in and out of jail. Don't even mix that part. So who was left running the show when he was getting taken away for the ice cream? He said, stay disciplined.
Yo,
and she straightened up. Whoa, boy.
Yo, Yeah. Said, just hurry and get me a lawyer.
Damn.
Yep.
But I'm not eating ice cream no more, so I know why I stopped. There you go, man. Shit. That was some ancestral shit. You don't leave that shit alone, man. Might get you caught up.
Don't do that.
Ice cream bars might get you caught up.
She definitely just gave such a her energy, her performance was such a powerful, quiet energy that you just from the rip knew, like, this is somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. She spoke life right into that man. And their relationship looked so reciprocal. Like, I don't
know. Thank you, Morgan. The trailers made you think something different. The trailers made you think she revered this man and just, like, on some worship shit. Just not bad, but just, like, some young teenage love shit to the big order. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't like that. And again, I'm jumping around, but the same way that people would revere Elijah Muhammad in the movie X, but he would take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Fred didn't. And they showed, you know what I'm saying? And the love was even killed. I agree with you. Same level.
It does say something about the director and the writers. I feel like there's a lot more intention today to make sure that our women are portrayed in a much better light than previous pieces that we've worked on. You know what I'm saying?
You mean you don't like the female leads and Low Down Dirty Shame? You don't like what's going on in there? Yeah, boy.
You dig me? I mean,
you could have got some.
Going back to
I remember that scene.
Going back to the earlier scene when Lakeith, when Bill first joined and was in the classroom and was trying to crack on Sister, like, checking, had the sister counting his push-ups, berating them the whole time. I'm like,
that was the sister he was cracking on. Oh,
yep.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Oh, it was, I didn't catch that.
I thought it was Brenda. I thought it was Sister Brenda.
Yeah, no, I think
it was. Oh, was it Brenda?
Probably Brenda.
Yeah, it was Brenda counting the push-ups out.
Like, with a leg up.
Yeah.
You know, always got some leg up on the wall. No.
Oh.
Yo, she hard as shit.
I'm getting Brenda on a t-shirt.
Yeah, you got to find it. They didn't even shoot her at the shootout. Double action.
Yo.
Gun. What? Second floor window.
She was up there serving.
Picking them off.
Yeah, here for every single piece of that. we won't go through the rest of the characters, but I'm going to ask a question.
Oh, wait. We have to mention homeboy that played Hoover.
Oh God! Yeah. Martin Sheen.
All right, didn't look like him. Looked like the Penguin. Am I right?
Looked like the Penguin. No,
he looked like Colin Farrell's Penguin.
And,
yes.
And that's how this boy looked. And the evil of Hoover needs to be illustrated at all times.
Who played Hoover before? Was it Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, because what do you mean in Panther? They had a flash.
No, someone, there was a Hoover film.
Oh, that was
Was that Leonardo?
It was Leonardo, and it was done bad. It was Leonardo. It was J. Edgar.
Okay.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
But even the prosthetics in that, Leonardo looked more like Hoover.
Yes.
Than Martin Sheen did.
You think so?
I don't know.
I thought this was, like, pretty close. The decaying skin.
This
was
oh, my God. That's exactly what he looks like.
Think about it, and because it's black and white. Remember, this stuff shouldn't be in, let's be real. None of this footage should be in black and white in these pictures. They do it on purpose. But we should really see it. Because first of all, make white people look how, you know what I'm saying, some of them how real look, and it makes us look like, you know, when they show, you know, they do that now, y'all see the colorized pictures, I'll be like,
oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
To make Malcolm look like he wasn't that far, like 80 years ago, is important, you know. But I'm with Morgan. I think this one was pretty
okay.
Was pretty tough.
No, look at J. Edgar Hoover, old. I didn't see DiCaprio's depiction, so I don't know about that. But when Castro said he looks like the Penguin, I haven't seen Colin Farrell's Penguin.
Oh,
I don't
my
think
God.
I'm legit thinking about
that. That's what I was thinking.
That's what
that's what I was thinking.
Okay,
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
when you guys like, see.
That's why
you see like Google still of Colin
Farrell, the new one.
Like because what they're they showed him in the trailer and we didn't know it was Colin Farrell.
Ah.
Like that's how
I remember
you don't even Yeah, you don't even recognize it as Colin Farrell. It's like, who is that?
Oh, it's totally fair that you said that. It's totally fair that you said that. And yuck.
Wait, let me look this up too. Hold on. Colin.
Oh, should have had this share screen up.
Penguin.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, right. Okay. You know, he looking like the boy from the boy in Thinner, the actor that played the skinny man in Thinner. Wow.
So I thought he did a decent, I thought he did a good job portraying him being the angry, racist white man that he was. Like,
boy, did he.
Nasty, sticky, filmy demagogue. That's what he always meant.
Yo, he seemed real fucking slimy and disgusting and gave me all the feels of J. Edgar Hoover anyway. So, like,
he meant it and fucked it up. He was efficient at his job. He meant it. He meant that there was going to be no Black Messiah. And he stamped them all out. Who's the only one they couldn't get, y'all? They couldn't get Farrakhan. That's the only one they couldn't get. Farrakhan and Castro. Because you definitely believe they done tried to assassinate Castro more than 9 times. And you know they tried to take out, and you know they tried to take out Farrakhan. They still plotting. They can't get to the minister.
It's still, yeah.
I was going to say, number one, you die real upset when you don't get Farrakhan when that's your agenda. And then two, ain't no way it stopped. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Like, no way.
Those attempts ain't stopped.
Yeah, but he was mad. You know that. He was mad when he expired. He wanted Farrakhan. He wanted all of them. Because he must have had you know what? He was probably a sick man. I had a little scrapbook.
Oh, God.
I mean, he did.
Kept it on him.
Little list of who he took out.
Yep.
Fuck up. Like, that was a government-sanctioned program. That's why I like how this movie was. It's COINTELPRO. This is the division of the government. Right? And with Pete, that's, you know, we say it's woe is me. No, there was a whole division of the government dedicated to stamping out our progression. Can y'all, let's say it out loud. Are you serious?
Right.
That's right.
Also, just what does that mean for the people that are doing that? They are fighting tooth and nail to not evolve. That's what they're doing. They are fighting to be Neanderthals.
Yep. And just to think of, so them having an idea of the potential that they want to stamp out more so than we even have of the potential on ourselves. They feel when somebody's declaring you dangerous and they're going to the many things. I watched the interview with Lakeith and he was saying in the research he did, he found out how much technology was being applied to these surveillance techniques that you didn't even know they had. He said they had a microphone that they could point at a building from 100 feet away and they could hear everything going on in that building. In the 70s, they had that thing. The stuff that's they were crazy. Doing to Dr. King, the surveillance he was on. They knew where he was going and they had it bugged up the wazoo, had people in the net.
You were there before you got there.
So like the resources expended shows you how they knew, and then so Lakeith flipped it. He said, they're spending millions of dollars on this shit. What if they took those resources and helped these organizations grow and expand and thrive? If we had a nationwide breakfast program, which I didn't remind myself until the movie that it was educational as well. I love the lessons part of the movie. And that they were teaching the kids because Hoover thought that they were indoctrinating the kids. And he thought the breakfast program was deadly. Because you're getting the kids young and teaching them this 10-point thing and teaching them. That stuff was like blowing me away when I was connecting those dots. You know?
I mean, I just cannot get over. Like, imagine being so obsessed that you're upset that children are eating breakfast. Like, that's really, it boils down. And we're still having these conversations today.
Yep.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Fucking Rush Limbaugh and his whole, you know, like,
ding dong, the witch is dead.
Boom.
Anyway, it's just so relevant. It kills me.
What did he die of? Fourth stage karma? Yeah, that's what that is. That's what that is.
Fourth stage racism.
Stage four karma, brother. Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a question. I feel terrible going past. I can't do it. Lil Rel, real quick.
Man.
I mean.
Where's my church fan? I need to be cooled down. I was. Woo! Oh,
my man said, y'all need a Chicago pimp?
Is this what we've been waiting for all this time from Lil Rel? We didn't know we need this.
But I thought he would have just played the background on some Spike Lee shit. Like, I didn't even think he was going to come into the scene.
Right.
Because he had his little lines and Shorty. And I thought that would have been it. And that would have been cool. Like, Lil Rel. Oh, y'all seen Rel at the end? Like, I thought it was just like that. But, AM, you go. Woo, I'm hot.
No. Yeah, he played that so smooth. It was ill. I'm like, listen, are you more pimp or cop? What is happening here? I don't understand.
And one of the same. And when he one in the same.
Listen, and he was like, you know what? I got the wrong person, and just kept dipping, and it really added to the panic of that scene for Bill. And I'm gonna tell you the truth. When that jazz piece, that part of the score came back.
Mm.
First off, it's my I've listened to that particular piece. It's in the movie twice. In the beginning, when he first gets to the bar and he looks in, it's like, damn, it's a bunch of motherfuckers in there.
Is an original piece?
It says how you got pulled again. Yeah, it's an original piece.
My homeboy, who I actually work with on my new album, him and his partner, they produced some of the score. Quelle Chris and Chris Key.
Okay,
they produced some of the score. It might have been one of their pieces, but they have like a number of pieces.
Yo, it's amazing. And then they brought it back. They brought it back at that scene when he gives him the badge back. I was like, oh,
show me a badge. God. Show me something. Here's your badge, sucker. Your same little. I got my blood went cold. Here's a badge. You want a badge?
Bruh.
Here's a badge for you. Oh, my goodness. His little cheap ass from the start brought me full circle on.
Yo!
Oh my goodness! Now,
first of all,
for the record, Bill O'Neill never admitted to poisoning Chairman Fred, but that barbiturate was found in Fred's system, and he was unresponsive. He didn't wake up amongst all those gunshots and stuff. She couldn't wake him up, so something did go down, but that's something he denied.
But just to close out my Nasa Sorrell, God bless the casting director. God bless his agent. Because the little bit of time that he was in that film, sir, put that on the resume.
Okay. Like,
that's his, that was highlight. Put that on
the impactful.
That's on the reel.
You know, like you don't.
That's you don't forget
that scene. There's an important article in there, Morph. I want you to check this article. It's real important. You need to read that. Read that article.
He goes right into his next casting request. Did you see me in
you didn't see that?
I can do this.
I'll pull it up. You know, go to the YouTube clip. It's not that long.
He just start throwing badges at people. He just keep extra badges on them. You know.
Hey,
remember me?
You want some authority documentation? You need to see a shield or something. You want to know why I'm here? This is why I'm here. This badge. That's why I'm here. Woo, that was a chill. And he just drove off. And it left Lakeith there in that paranoia 360 camera. I don't know if they went around him, but you know that move they do when the camera spins around him and stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, But I was feeling that. Next thing you know, he's over there with the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's trying to give Fred something to drink. Sorry.
Yo.
Bruh.
My man, like, I seriously, when he did that, I was like, you couldn't have just taken one more minute to breathe? Like, you couldn't have just...
You can hear him swallowing. You're ready. Like, you know that when you're nervous, he's bumping into people at the party, and he's like having a super reaction. They're like, hey, you all right, brother? He's having a whole panic attack.
Are you all right?
You don't know what I'm about.
Is everybody who ain't
grabbing the wall? He's got to get his bearings every time. Are you all right, brother? You want some water?
It's like sit down, have the water before you go talk to Chairman.
I also
want
to before I forget. I want to give a nod to the brother that played. I forgot his name. Brother Jake Winter.
Oh,
and his whole
Algie Smith.
Yeah, and the way his whole thing broke down from them killing the boy, because Jake Winters, that's a real shootout that actually happened. Him shooting a cop in the face, I won't say I don't know if that happened, but that he did die that way. And then
supposedly he wasn't by himself.
Right, there was another Panther there, and them naming the medical center again. Yeah, it was what Fred said in the movie. We need them to have his name.
Yeah.
More associated, and you do that when you name a medical center in the neighborhood, you start thinking of it as a healing place as opposed to, you know.
Yes.
And the brother that played Bobby Rush killed that shit.
Yeah, he was killing it.
I was like, definitely.
He's from The Wire, right? Woo! He's from The Wire. He was young as hell in The Wire. Yes, he was one of Chris and them henchmen. He was rolling with Chris and them crew. Just one of the shooters. Yep.
Why can't I? I don't have his name in front of me. Sorry. But yeah, he was.
Man.
I don't. There was not a weak performance.
Thank
at all.
You.
Like,
no.
Every
None.
Person and that's why I feel bad going past people. Like everybody was incredible.
Yeah.
And then who's the other gentleman that lost his life with Chairman Fred? Mark Clark.
Mark Clark.
Okay. That young brother came in at the end, gave his little spiel, and I was like, oh man, you about to die. I remember just like I thought you was at the movie the whole time. No, you just came visiting. I started feeling horrible. It's like, because I knew it was about to happen. I was like, oh man, you about to die. Like, you the one, ooh. But then they had the other brother there, the other snitch. He was real too. That was a real dude.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that other snitch really died that way. And that they really did that to somebody that they found was on the other end.
I'm mad at all of us because Brenda's name is Judy.
Is Judy? Did we say Judy?
It's Judy.
What was the first name we said?
We said Brenda.
First I thought her name was Deborah too. And then it was all the way wrong.
So
rest in peace, Sister Brenda.
Right, we did watch the movie.
We did, y'all. We seen it. We did see that, y'all.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that may seem like the end, but it's not. How did you feel when the credits started rolling?
Oh my God,
Castro,
you go first, man.
It's hard, yo, because when a movie is done well in this genre, I end up feeling mad all the fuck over again. I just get enraged all over again. Like it was my sophomore year in college and I was taking my first African-American aesthetics class and learning this and learning that and finding out the despicable nature of certain wickedness on this planet. And it just makes you mad. And you start wanting to rearrange history and like, damn, well, who was there? Well, could we? And what, and thank God for this.
What we need to do
now. And like, I started looking, you start looking out your window and seeing white people walk across the crosswalk. You want to throw stuff at them and shit. Like, it always just reignites. It's like, to me, it's always like the Mission Impossible theme. And it goes the fuse again. Like, at the end of those movies, it's just like, here, like, Rachel Fury stuff. And I'm starting to do the thing.
Yeah, you're right back in it.
All over
you're
right again. Back right, in right, it. Take me right back to the grill again.
You know what? That's a very spot on comparison because you're right. At the end of those movies, it brings you down. It gives you calm and resolution, and then boom, boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom. You're like, oh, you thought I loaded up your little racial gun.
Yeah. So yeah, for me, I end up going to a damn dissertation at the end of the film. We're going to tell you. I felt really good about the way they portrayed the story. I was really proud to have that story told. And I was telling Morgan about a tweet I saw from No Name.
Oh, here she goes. And I saw
sentiment. And the sentiment of a couple other people, within that same age bracket talking about, this isn't something that these revolutionaries would have wanted to happen, for Hollywood to have their hands on this story and what I said was it's interesting. It's an interesting perspective because they're blessed to have come up in a time where you have Issa Rae, you have Jordan Peele, you have Lena Waithe, you have people that are creating on these huge platforms where you get to see yourself and get to see authentic Black life. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're comparing this to. This is a story, like you said, sophomore year of college.
Hit 'em.
This COINTELPRO, never was this supposed to be. This don't make it to HBO.
That's a secret. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a secret. Mm-hmm. It's the secret's secret. Even still now, right now, the fact that this film came out, there are still Black people.
Tell them.
obviously white people. There are still black people that still think COINTELPRO didn't happen. Yep. Well, that's just something from the movie. The government ain't really do that.
I'm gonna stop you from that because that's a part of the next thing. So
okay, okay.
Get back to your point.
So, at the end of it, I was just like, it felt good. It felt good. I didn't feel cheated. I didn't. You know, there wasn't any more of the story to tell. Getting that final scene from Eyes on the Prize 2 with Bill, that was new to me. I didn't see that. I didn't see any of that footage before. But upon seeing him, I was like, oh, this is Lakeith's uncle. Like,
yeah, they really bro, did.
The casting when this was
crazy. Can I piggyback on the no-name tweet thing? So this is also a generation where they have information at their fingertips. Where we, growing up, Morgan, even you two, we had to go, where's the encyclopedia? Pull it out, or you have to take a trip to the library. Like,
and print out you, and you had to listen. You had to go to the computer, hit print, run to the copier,
right? Get it before run to the printer, right? Dot and, matrix, rip off your section, and this is also yes, I remember
before someone sees what you were printing, and you get in trouble for printing that.
You. And I remember, I'm not going to let them belittle this moment for whatever reason they have, because I remember how important it was when I saw Glory. I remember how important it was when I saw Malcolm X. I remember how important it was when I saw Amistad in that medium. Mm. And even if it wasn't historically accurate, you know what I'm saying? Seeing Denzel coming off the hill saying, come on, before he gets shot like that. All right, boy, you all right? All right, because I know, yeah, girl, I know it'll have you. I know thinking about that tear will come streaking, all right, girl? Yes. And so those things, that was important. So, and that's, and I know y'all are, you know, y'all young parents. So to have Kaylin get to watch a Fred Hampton movie in a good light, shot well, done well, not
with us colored well, you know what I'm saying?
The light. Last 5 years, we got it right. Last 5 years.
Come on now.
I just watched the whole YouTube on colorization and how it made, like, take for instance, Birth of a Nation, the original one. If when they took the saturation out, it makes the white features pop, but it makes the black people darken, and then they use that in Black Hawk Down. So it looks like an army of like just darker people against the bright soldiers wearing green. Mm-hmm. Y'all didn't even notice that, right? You can't even tell the features of the impending like hordes. Remember, it just looks like a rush of black people with weapons because they desaturated it. So it blends in. You don't really see our noses and under our eyes. And
you don't see our features.
Yes, you just see like shadowy movements, and it makes you more sympathetic to the soldiers encumbered, even though they were trying to occupy. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So for me, after the movie was over, I had this immediate, like you said, Am, just like felt good, felt happy that was out, that there's that story being told and the way that it was told. And then immediately I was just, I hate the government. Like, there's just, I can't get over that. I can't get over just how much energy and resources and time these people have spent to simply make our lives harder every single day.
Yeah.
And that's just like since you're still here, I'm going to make your life hard. You know what I mean? Like,
you don't want to leave.
Couldn't eradicate. We did, you know, like, it just, I can't get past it. And it really like, it changes, you know, my ability to like, how much am I going to be able to rewatch it? Just because this isn't fake, you know, like, and when you're used to being the like one of a couple people in the room that know the story, and then you're explaining the story, like, this is the kind of thing where you don't have to do that anymore, and you can say, here are the things that you can do to find this out for yourself, right? Like, and I'm super happy for that, but I'm also like,
it's hard to pace yourself with that much access to information. We were more paced when we were growing up. I can only read one book at a time, right? You know?
Yeah.
So,
I guess it puts me in this place of like, I can't, it feels like it's insurmountable still. What has changed? What is different? Why? You know what I mean? Like, that's still happening. It's happening to us right now in our face. Shit. It's just
making me drink.
Yeah, activists, you're right. Activists are still disappearing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They went black hole on them that first round that y'all was telling me to unmark. Oh, those people are, you know where they at. They're at, they took them to Abu Dhabi. They have, that's a weird, Abu Ghraib, that's a weird space where, like, no law is allowed. Like, they still got people, Taliban people, with no charges and no, there's no court date, no litigation. We got you. Mm. And that's it. And
you're here.
In a hole. And they still got them. And so they just add, I think they added some, you know, one of the protesters I've heard, they got 10 years. They're not going to keep them in. They're going to send them over there. Like, where it's like law. How we have a place that's like law. I know
devoid of complete law.
Yeah, people can't see my hand movements, but it's like, it's negated of law in this area, but we run it. Yeah, you know.
Right.
So our policy is then the law.
Right.
And all human
no
rights.
No Geneva Convention rules apply.
Not at all. Not even close. When you're half drowning them with waterboard, we had to be smacked on our hand. Don't waterboard them, people. Stop. What?
Yo.
Hmm.
War crime. What's that?
War crime. Who this? Electrodes to your nipples. Who's this? Electrodes to the nipples. Who's this? That's you. This you? This, you know what this is? This is one of those electrodes to the nipple. This you? Did you, Gummy? This you. We're humane and we're God fearing America. Stop it.
Yeah, no. So that's where I immediately go and I get into that realm of like, is this what I can't even ask the question. Like, is everything that what matters? Like,
it is.
What's
it is
different?
Worth it though, Morg. It is worth it because.
No, I know it.
I mean, it's incremental. Let's be real, but it is like, you know, when we really sit down. I know. I roll my eyes. Yeah, I go to people. Yeah, it's been progress. Okay, like know. You know, like but
yes, there's but the your needle ain't moving fast enough, fam. And when I can already, like I said, when you're used to being the person that you know, one of the people that knows the story in the room, like. More people need to know this story already. That already frustrates me. It already frustrates me that there are so many people that are like, the U.S. government would never do anything like that. Like, that's in 2021, they're saying that. They're purposely not learning. Fighting tooth and nail not to evolve.
Chairman Fred Jr. had a good quote. I was watching an interview with him and Lakeith and the curator of this. And he said, this movie was important to show I'm forgetting the first part. I wish I had it. But it's to what you're saying, Mark. This movie goes to important to show that it's not a let. What did he say? It's not. The government didn't stand by while drugs got into the community. The government brought drugs into the community. Okay, the government. Right. You know what I'm saying? The government didn't keep an eye out on people threatening these black leaders. The government threatened the black leaders. You know what I'm saying? And sanctioned their murders. Like, so this puts more of a face to that spooky, deep throat. Like, that's real. Like,
I tell
Zilla this all the time. Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean I'm wrong. And I think this is one of the movies that lends to that. Just because we're scared to death doesn't mean we're overreacting. And slavery was 500 years ago. Like, no, colorize the pictures. Like, that's my next movement. Colorize the pictures. So people can stop thinking.
Castro, I'm 1,000% with you.
It's not ancient history here. It's not pyramids and people pulling law. Colorize the pictures, you know?
Right. Yeah. I keep screaming to the world, like my dad was 19 during the civil rights era. Like,
not that long ago.
And he's 75 today. Like, and not a feeble, can't move, like up and moving, talking, telling you his story. 75 at 20, this was happening to him, you know. Right. Like, we think that it's hundreds of years ago, it simply isn't. And colorize the pictures. Mm-hmm.
I like to remind people all the time when it's like, you know, tell us about yourself and where'd you grow up in, and you know, what high school, interracial dating outlawed.
Tell them
94. 94.
Chester's greatest moment. The person moment.
You're talking to.
Chester's greatest moment.
Well, this was in Delaware.
Oh, same day. Yes.
Yeah. Right. You know what I'm saying? The person you're talking to, when he was in high school, I would have gotten expelled for interracial dating.
Nice.
Like, this is not ancient history, guys. It's not.
Not close.
It's not. Not even close, bro. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Deep breath. Deep breath. Deep yeah, breath.
Thank you. Thank
deep
you.
Breath.
So this goes directly into what I was going to say. Do you think movies like this move the needle towards a more truthful or accurate telling of history?
I think.
Because I feel like, I just feel like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have got this version of J. Edgar Hoover. We wouldn't have got that version of the other FBI agents that were just like, yeah, kill him.
The more irrefutable evidence in many media, movie, TV, poetry, song, it leaves the deniers with less than a foot to stand on. And it needs to be shown that way. Even if it has to be done in an artistic manner, if they don't want to change the textbook, so be it. But we're going to have four movies that's telling you the truth. We're going to have a cartoon that's telling you the truth.
Right.
And then they can't deny it. We got the pictures that's telling you the truth. Because that's what's going on. That's what this Trump, you know, I don't care bringing them up. That's what Trumpism is plausible deniabilities. I just said something and I didn't say it. And that's their whole shit. And you can't prove I just said it. And now, whatever.
I'm going to change the conversation to you have to prove it.
And you know what? You can't say I did it because you didn't prove that I didn't do it. Like that, what is happening? Yeah. And that's the thing. You can't prove he didn't do it. Where and what planet are we on? We just landed the Mars rover today. Slow your roll. These politicians are tricky. Right. You remember that was Tricky Dick? And I wasn't around for that. And I remember asking people about it. This is what it feels like. The politicians in this government feel like three-card Molly all over again. And I lost $80 on payday for that shit. Trust me, it'll make you think the ball is in the right one and the ball is in the left one. And then you're looking at it and you're watching it and you see the curve on the card. And you're like, I got this guy. No, he got you. And let me tell you, they took my money on payday and he gave me one more chance to get my money. And he said, and if I win, you got to shake my hand and say I'm good. And he won, and I shook his hand and got off the bus and I had to go into my girlfriend, and I'm $80 light on payday.
Damn. Damn, son.
Right back, doesn't it?
I'm flooding right back. Goddamn government.
Right. So, I think it's important. Ambush, please. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I agree with your point. I think it is important. Every piece of art, as Castro put it, it does move the needle. And we're long enough in the tooth to appreciate it because when we were younger, we didn't have these stories. We just didn't.
Yeah.
We just didn't. Right. We were constantly being told and given portrayals, much to... Black actors and actresses disapproval, you know, they got to make a living, but we were given portrayals that just weren't honest.
They were written
by white people.
Had no teeth.
And didn't have teeth. You know what I'm saying? That's changing. That's definitely changing. Being able to take part of that, with the radio station and, you know, being able to control media to some aspect. Yeah, it is refreshing. It's great. It really, really is. And I appreciate it. I really do. Like you said, to be able to arm a child, especially in some of these classrooms. I don't know if y'all saw the video just recently of this teacher. As a black student, he's holding the phone in front of him. So it's just his reaction to a teacher telling him that that nigga wasn't a negative
term. Oh, I saw that.
Attributed to black people. It was just ignorance.
No, first he said that they were calling white people cracker and... because they cracked the whips, and the teacher said that didn't happen. They didn't crack the whips. And the kid first said, "How do you know that? Were you there?
How you know? Were you there?"
Also, what do you mean they didn't crack the whip? What are you talking?
Oh yeah, this guy was on. He was
Where
on.
Where did
one.
Name come from? The then
substitute teacher.
Yeah.
What did you call white people crackers for? Then
he was on one.
Flat out saying there was no whip cracking. Yeah.
And then he was saying calling somebody nigger is just saying somebody's ignorant.
Ignorant. That's it. That's it. But it was funny because someone said in one of the on one of the comments, you see, he said N-word though.
Yep.
If it just means ignorant, why you say N-word?
You vocabulary like, choices. Vocabulary right. choices.
Mm-hmm. So to be able to arm, you know, younger generations with this and have them grow up with this information so readily available is beautiful. It's like I can just turn on HBO Max right now and watch a Fred Hampton film.
Yep. Right. Right now today.
And it's on the marquee. It's the banner. Yep. You know, like
with Daniel Kaluuya playing who?
This means something.
Tim Fred Hampton.
Hello.
Yes. Hey. Yeah.
Yeah, this moves the needle.
I think I just enjoyed how much they would talk about him in third person right in front of him. Chairman Fred? Chairman? You all right, Chairman? I love it, man.
I wonder if white people will take, excuse me, I wonder if they'll take from this that if they didn't know about J. Edgar Hoover before, like we know he's the devil. Or devil's the wrong word. But
no,
that's an insidiously evil person.
But look how long it takes them to come around on Giuliani.
That makes you sound like religious, and I don't mean to do that.
But look how long it's taking them to come around on Giuliani. Giuliani.
Oh my God, and Cuomo.
Giuliani's one of those the greatest trick the devil ever pulled, because people don't realize is before 9/11, everybody hated him. White people hated him.
Yep.
Black people hated him. What? The cops hated him. He was a despicable human. Like I used to tell people, like if you don't believe in demons, he had pointy ears. He had something wrong with his teeth. Like this was one of those demons that tripped in a cloud and fell. Okay, and he's down here with us now. And 9/11 happened, and it was his saving grace. Unfortunately, all those people lost their lives because all he did was show a decent face. He wasn't doing anything. He didn't, you know, he didn't spearhead anything. He didn't. I don't know if he passed any. I mean, he cleared the way for the Patriot Act. Here you go. But you know what I'm saying? Real quick. I mean, we know they had that binder typed up years past. But anyway,
ready to go.
Ready.
Because that thing was huge. I remember they showed the next. I said, "Whoa!" Like y'all wrote that last night.
Where'd that come from? Right.
Right.
But anyway,
this is that's a great point. And I agree. I worry that we need four of these for people to go, damn, so that thing, I went to J. Edgar Hoover High School. Maybe I was.
But he's still the creator of the FBI to them. So that's, you know, because the FBI took down the mob more. So that would always be, you know, his toting umbrella. Took down the mob.
You said, like, you're worried that we need four of these to get the point across. I want 18 of them. I want it to be normalized. Mm-hmm. I want the story to, keep. I want someone else to do a version of this. I want the cartoon.
They got that. They got two movies about the aviator, about Howard Hughes. How about that?
Right.
Seriously.
Keep giving them to us. is a black hero.
Right.
This is a black hero. We need more movies about this black hero that y'all assassinated.
And not just that, because you know there's like six Martin Luther King movies. I remember I was looking at Who Played King. It was like our homeboy when he was younger. And then, you know,
Jeffrey Wright.
And then, I'm talking about even back in the day, some older black actors took a swipe at him. I'm with you, man. I wouldn't mind having four Hampton portrayals. Six Huey movies with different actors and all that stuff.
Yes. Keep them coming.
Like franchise it like Spider-Man. Renew the rights.
Exactly.
Every 3 years, we got to do another Huey movie or we lose the rights.
Come on.
Stop playing with me.
Yes.
It's in the universe, the Black Panther universe.
Yes. Right. Civil rights universe.
look. Mario Van Peebles getting mad. Every Panther movie make his look even more fucking plastic. You're like, God damn it.
Make like the first Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah,
like,
the first one, the one that never got released. Looking all rubber and shit, all these little judge figurines in Mario Van Peebles' garage. He's just never sell my fucking army jacket judge. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, so this is sort of the same, not the same, but the I don't know why I'm doing this. Anyway, so the Black Panthers were directly addressing the fallout of systemic racism, white supremacy, disaster capitalism, and classism, which doesn't just affect Black people, right?
Right.
And they were addressing that with socialism and mutual aid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think or hope or want this movie to mean to non-Black people to today?
I'm glad because I forgot, outright forgot. And I'm glad they showed this angle. They showed the power that they saw in Chairman Fred by his Rainbow Coalition, which I absolutely forgot that he enacted. And in the sense that I knew that they were recruiting gangs, and I just, my imagination is like, oh my God, what the Bloods and the Crips got with the Black Panthers back there. But to show that the Young Patriots, the white group, went with them, that the Young Lords, I forgot about that. And that is, that's what really probably had Hoover's panties truly in a bunch. And if anybody wants to know, that's where the term comes from. It was Hoover, his panties, he used to wear panties and they used to be twisted up when he would get mad. So that's where the term panties in a bunch come from. And so by showing that, oh my goodness, we can't even divide and conquer like we normally do with these cats. And there's way more of them than us. We were totally outnumbered in that effort. And it, you know what I'm saying? If we could, if they, if he could make the impoverished whites feel that like the cops beat up on your ass too. And that's a big thing we have of our division is they make today's media and political right, they make poor white people feel like they're with them and they don't give a damn about
right.
them. And they're not with them. Right. And they're more parallel.
Well, that's a Republican strategy, right? Exactly. Right? That's a right-wing strategy that they've been working for many years. And because they've seen this and they know that they aren't the minority if everybody else was aligned, you know?
Yes. Like, so, yeah, I think they should, people should see that there's a place for everybody in this movement. I think that's what this movie should show. There's a place for everybody in this movement. If you're not, if you're a non-person of color. But did I say that right? Is that a double negative? Shit.
If you're
non-BIPOC. Anyway, I can't do it. I can't do these acronyms.
No, you got it. Non-person of color.
Okay. Well, what's the bi? What's the non-Black
person of color is how you say it. Is that what you said?
I said not.
He said non-person of color.
Well, I said non-BIPOC.
No, but it's what's non-Black.
The oh.
Non-Black person of color.
But what's the I? What what's the I in BIPOC?
Oh, no. No, that's Black Indigenous people of color.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know how long it took me to realize what AAVE stood for?
Oh, my God, bless it.
And then I have a song titled it now, but it's so funny. I was saying, I was like, agave? What's this agave thing? I'm not putting that shit in my fucking tea. Fuck y'all. Like,
okay, but not the movement. The
right.
Movement.
Mm-mm.
Okay, Ambush. What's your hope? What do you think they will take from this? What do you? That's two different questions.
Yeah,
so I'll stick with what do you hope that non-Black people take away from this and the relevancy of today? You know, what does it?
I hope that non-Black people will understand the government's intentional or organized effort to destroy us. When we're talking about wanting to make sure we didn't have leadership, you wanted to make sure that the Black community didn't have anyone to help them out from under the boot that you had us under. You didn't want us to be led out of that. Absolutely not. So that's what I hope that, you know, non-people of color would understand. Just that. Just that. Because then I think that will begin to open their eyes and add some legitimacy to what we've been saying over and over and over and over and over again. You know, do I think it'll have that impact? I don't. Only because it shouldn't take. I don't believe in the power of this one particular film to move the needle for people that. They've been given everything they need right now. You know what I'm saying? They have all the information that if you honestly, honestly want to understand the plight of African Americans here, It's all out here. It's in our music. But then, it's in our clothing. It's in our films. It's in our books. It's on your internet. But you're making a choice to dodge that conversation and meet us and go do yoga.
But then, but there's, that's why I brought up Birth of a Nation when we started. The sabotage is in effect. Right? Sure. You know what I'm saying? Like, that movie was like, wow. Like, it was taken out by its legs. I don't know who they coordinated with when they brought up the allegations that were years old back up. And yes, my man had to answer for it, but okay, like the week before. And so, like, the when I'm saying the sabotage is in effect, even when we have a curry of favor, like, there was some swelling going on with that. I remember it was like people were getting excited about it. And then it just was like a balloon that just was popped when we, and it was,
and that affected American skin. It affected
American skin. I didn't even see that yet. That's on
name.
Neither have I. That's, and that's
exactly
the point.
What he means. That's the point. Yeah, good. Great point.
That's the point.
Yeah.
The concept of American skin is like, oh no, this is the film we've been waiting for forever.
I heard. Yep. You're right. He's tainted now.
He's tainted.
Damn.
He's tainted.
They good. Ain't he going to tell people good, boy? They good. Damn.
They pros at the COINTEL.
They're
pros at that.
They keep moving their office around in the Pentagon, but the niggas keep their lights on. They keep their lights on.
They keep a budget.
They keep a budget. The accountant's like, God damn it. You know, like, we got to, all right, reauthorize it. God damn it.
It's like the Wayne Foundation. They're under the research and development. That's where
the X-Files office kept moving around, like to the basement. Remember they moved into the horrible little section? Yeah. Can't get rid of Mold and them COINTELPRO boys, yo. Can't get rid of.
Oh my god.
Damn, yo.
So I'm with you guys. What I want, what I wish, what I am most hopeful for, I don't think will happen at all. But what I want people to non-Black people to take away from, and you know what, not just non-Black people, I want everybody to take away from this, that a couple of things. One, we're still having this same conversation that Chairman Fred was giving us, the Rainbow Coalition, right? We're having that conversation still today, and we are even more divided,
right,
and even further away from people actually being united in that regard.
It right.
kills me because we have even more proof now on why we should all be so much easier to unify, or quicker, or want to, or whatever. I think not understanding how all of these things are connected has allowed people to believe that they're not. And when you actually focus in on these things, if you're talking about systemic racism, if you're talking about white supremacy, you can't have those conversations without capitalism involved, you know? And every single piece of it is connected. Y'all need to know that. Take that away from this. If you didn't know it before, if you know what I mean, because we can't, we're further behind. We can't still be trying to convince you that you're affected by these things too. And for Black people, we have to understand that it doesn't have to be a Black agenda for it to benefit us. So if we're talking about a Green New Deal, that's climate justice. We need that. You know what I mean? Like, we are the most impacted by environmental racism. Like, we need a different way to have energy. And just because it doesn't say it's only going to affect Black people, like, you got to understand that you need that fresh air too.
Yeah.
And it, all of us do.
Yeah.
So when Black people are not oppressed, everybody's life is better. That's what you need to take away from this. And look at the resiliency of knowing that, like you said, him going and getting the Patriot Boys or whatever the hell their names were, like, knowing that these people hate you in a way that is a brain disease. Like, they have no reason to, right? But they are ready and willing to kill you for just existing. to be able to get those people to understand we are on the same playing field when it comes to the capitalism. Like, it, you don't really understand how far down the boot they're on you, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and if we were able to get to that point again on a larger scale, there's no way. I mean, we're the majority at that point.
Right.
So I'm hoping that people take away from this that organizing and unifying is the only way that this changes. It will not at all just be these little pocket silo protests. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we have to be a larger conglomerate.
Indeed.
Rewatchability.
I would have to echo your sentiment more. I want to watch it again, but it might be a hard rewatch.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Same. Yeah. I think it's essential for rewatching viewing? Essential viewing. And you know, even like rewatching it with a group of people, whenever we can get back to that, sure, let's do that. There's so many elements of this film to analyze, especially the Black love aspect. There's just so much in it. But yeah, it's gonna need support.
Did the girls watch it?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, that's our next watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, how many no names?
4.
Amber.
Sorry. Okay.
Yep. Boom. Sorry. You were asking something. Go ahead and ask it.
You could.
4.
Oh, okay. Damn. I missed my opportunity to cut you off. I was going to do it too.
Not to jump ahead. You know, I hate jumping ahead.
You Shout do. Afro. You do.
I really hate. We miss your ass. We'll get you on the next one. But y'all know what it is now, right? WandaVision time.
It's up.
It's time.
All right.
Excellent. You're still here. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of A Podcast Has No Name. If this is your first time checking us out, please subscribe. We are available on Google Play, Apple Music, Spotify, and pretty much everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcast Has No Name. Deuces.
Subscribe, please, please, please. Click and comment.